The Dudaim. Jacob had spent the first years of his marriage almost entirely in Laban's court, leaving to the under-shepherds and hirelings the care of the flocks in the meadows. Though he visited them from time to time, took a muster of their charges, and received the increase in animals and goods which belonged to Laban, and yet not all, sometimes not even the larger share, for a good deal outside and even in the courtyard, where Jacob had erected several new buildings to store his goods, already belonged to Laban's son-in-law, so that in time one might have spoken of the intermingling of two flourishing businesses, and a sufficiently complicated calculation of interests, which Jacob obviously oversaw and controlled, but which had long since got beyond Laban's power to disentangle, though he would never have admitted as much, partly because of fear to expose his lack of understanding, partly because of the old anxiety lest he vex the blessing in the body of his overseer by meddling and criticizing in his affairs. Things were going too well to risk that. He must wink at any irregularities he saw, and in truth, by now he scarcely dared to open his mouth in matters of business, so obvious and overwhelming was the evidence that Jacob was indeed the very child of his God. 6 sons and water-pourers he had raised up to himself in 4 years, double that which Laban had been able to do in the near neighborhood of the blessing. His respect, if secret, knew no bounds. The only abatement of it was due to Rachel's barrenness. One must give the man his head, and only be grateful that it seemed not to occur to him to break off and set out on his wanderings. The thought of return, of a resurrection from this pit and underworld that was Laban's country, had actually never been remote from Jacob's thoughts, as little now after 12 years as it was after 24. But he took his time, in the organic consciousness that he had time to take, for he was to live to 106, and had got out of the habit of connecting the idea of leaving with the time when Esau's wrath might be supposed to have died down. Furthermore, a certain rooting of his life in the soil of Naharina had necessarily come about, for he had lived through much in this spot, and the things a man goes through in a place are like roots which he sinks into the ground. But in the main, Jacob's reasoning was that he had not yet taken enough advantage from his sojourn, was not yet heavy enough in goods. The underworld afforded 2 kinds of things, filth and gold. He had made acquaintance with the filth, in the shape of the cruel waiting and the even crueler deception with which the demon Laban had rent his soul in twain on the bridal night, and he had begun to lade himself with the riches, but not enough, not in abundance. Whatever there was to take, he must pack, and Laban must still bleed gold. They were not yet quits. The man must be even more thoroughly cheated, not for the sake of Jacob's revenge, but simply because it was fitting that the biter should be bit, though our Jacob had not as yet seen the effective means of carrying out the decree. All that put him off, and his business occupied him. He was now much abroad in field and steppe, absorbed in breeding and trading on his own and Laban's account, which might be, among others, a reason for the check in the flow of blessings in the shape of progeny. Although his wives and their children, as well as Laban's growing sons, were often with him at the sheep pens, and lived there in tents and huts. Rachel had now become jealous of Bilhah, by whose help she had achieved sons of her own. She no longer suppressed her feeling, but forbade intercourse between master and maid, both of them readily bowing to her command. She herself remained barren into the 5th, then into the 6th year, or forever, as it unhappily seemed. Also, Leah's body lay fallow, very much to her vexation, but it simply rested 1 year and then 2, so that she said to Jacob, "I know not what it can mean, nor what sort of disgrace I am visited with, that I am now empty and useless. If thou hadst only me, it would not happen, nor had I remained 2 years unblessed. But my sister is all unto our Lord, and taketh my husband from me, so that hardly can I help cursing her, although I love her. Perhaps this strife it is that weakeneth my blood, so that I bear no fruit, and thy God thinketh no more of me. But what was pleasing unto Rachel pleaseth me too. Take then Zilpah, my maid, and lie with her, that she may bear upon my lap, and I shall have sons through her. If, then, I am already unworthy before thee, yet I will still have children in any case, for they are like balm upon the wounds which thy coldness makes." Jacob scarcely denied her grievance. He told her that she too had worth in his eyes, but his words bore the stamp of indifferent politeness. In this he was blameworthy. Could he not bring himself to show a little kindly feeling towards this woman, even though he had suffered so sorely through her means? Must every kind word he gave her seem to him like treachery towards his own cherished feelings? The day would come when he should bitterly repent the arrogance of his heart, but that day was still far off, and before it came, his feeling was still to be vouchsafed its highest triumph. Leah had probably made the suggestion about Zilpah for form's sake, as another way of hinting that Jacob should pay her more frequent visits, but the loftiness of Jacob's feeling made him ignore or fail to see the point. He simply said that he was willing to avail himself of Zilpah's aid in breaking the dam and the stream of progeny. Rachel, of course, could not refuse her consent, especially after the high-bosomed Zilpah, who had a certain likeness to Leah and never found much favor in Jacob's eyes, came humbly and begged permission of the favorite. Then Leah's maid, in meekness and slavish compliance, received the master, conceived, and gave birth on the knees of her mistress, who helped her to groan. In the 7th year of marriage, the 14th of Jacob's sojourn, she bore Gad and commended him to fortune. Likewise, in the 8th and 15th, the sweet-toothed Asher. Jacob had now 8 sons. At this time, near the birth of Asher, occurred the episode of the Dudaim. It was Reuben who had the luck to find them. He was 8 at the time, a swarthy, muscular lad, with inflamed eyelids. He already shared in the work of the early harvest, for which Laban and Jacob had come from the shearing, and which made the household laborers and hired hands to pant. Laban, the sheep breeder, who when Jacob first came had sowed nothing but one sesame field, now, after the coming of the water, planted barley and millet, and above all, wheat. His wheat field, enclosed in a clay wall and scored with irrigation ditches, was his most important one. It was 6 acres in extent, undulating over a shallow rise of ground, and its loam was rich and strong. If Laban let it lie fallow from time to time, as he never failed to do, according to the time-honored rule, it bore more than 30-fold. This year was a year of blessing. The pious labor of planting, of the plow and of the scattered hand, of the hoe, the harrow, and the water-pail, had been rewarded from on high. Before the ears formed, Laban's cattle had had rich green pasturage. No gazelle had pilfered the fruit, nor had locusts covered the land, nor floods wrenched it away. The harvest stood rich in Ijar. And Jacob, although known to be no farmer, this time gave evidence of the blessing in this sphere as well, and by deed and word brought about a thicker sowing than usual, with the result that though the kernels were somewhat fewer in the ear, yet the whole yield was larger, enough larger that Laban, as Jacob tried to make clear to him with figures, reaped an advantage, even though a fixed share fell to his son-in-law. They were all working in the fields, even Zilpah, who gave suck to Gad and Asher in the intervals of work. Only the daughters of the house, Leah and Rachel, had remained home to prepare the meal. The harvesters swung their scythes among the corn, their bodies glistening with sweat, singing hymns as they worked. They wore sun shields made of reed, and aprons of sheepskin round their loins. Others cut straw or bound the sheaves, loading them upon asses and ox-carts which bore the blessing to the threshing floor, where it was threshed by oxen, winnowed, sifted, and stacked. The boy Reuben had shown himself a man among the laborers. Now, in the golden afternoon, his arms were tired, and he sauntered away to the margin of the field. There, by the clay wall, he found the mandrake. It needed a sharp eye and a trained one to have seen it. The coarse oval leaves showed only a little above the soil, invisible to any but an instructed gaze. It was by its berries, the dudaim themselves, dark-colored and about the size of hazelnuts, that Reuben knew what was underneath in the earth. He laughed and praised God. He seized his knife, drew a circle round, and dug until the root hung only by slender threads. Then he uttered a two-worded charm for his own protection and pulled out the root with a quick jerk. He had thought that it would shriek, but nothing happened. And yet it was a proper and well-shapen little sprite that he held by the topknot, white like flesh, with two legs, the size of a child's hand, bearded and covered all over with fibrous hairs. It was a kobold, fit to make you laugh with amazement. The boy knew its properties. They were many and useful, but in particular, Reuben knew, they were good for women. Therefore he thought at once of Leah, his mother, and ran home to fetch it her. Leah was delighted. She praised and complimented her eldest, gave him a fistful of dates, and warned him not to boast of the matter before father and grandfather. "Silence is no sin," she said, and it was not necessary that everybody should know what they had in the house. It was enough if all should reap the benefit. "I will bide the time," she finished, "and get from it all that it has to give. Thanks, Reuben, my eldest-born, son of the first wife. Thanks that thou hast had her in mind. There are others that think not of her. From them hast thou thy lucky hand. Go now thy ways." Thus she dismissed him, and thought to keep the treasure for herself. But Rachel, her sister, had been watching and seen all. Who was it later used to peep about just so, and then prattle to his own undoing? It was in her flesh and blood, along with her many charms, and she passed it on to her offspring. She said to Leah, "What hath our son brought to thee?" "My son," said Leah, "hath brought me nothing, or the merest trifle. Wast thou by chance hereabouts? For he brought me a beetle in his childishness, and a bright-colored stone." "He hath brought thee a little earth mannikin, with the leaves and the fruit," Rachel said. "Yes, he brought me that too," responded Leah. "Here it is. See how plump and stocky it is. My son found it for me." "Ah, yes," cried Rachel, "thou art right. It is firm and fleshy, and hath many dudaim, full of seed." She had folded her hands against her pretty cheek. Almost she had stretched them out in entreaty. She asked, "What wilt thou make of it?" "Put a little shirt on him, of course," answered Leah, "after I have washed and anointed him, and lay him in a basket and wait for him to bring blessing on the house. He will frighten the demons of the air, that none of them enters into a man or into a beast in the stall. He will foretell the weather, and find out things that are hidden for the present, or that lie in the future. It will make a man proof against weapons if I put it in his clothing, and will bring him gain in trade, and grant him judgment before the judge, even though he be in the wrong." "How thou pratest," said Rachel. "Know I not myself it is good for all that? But what else wilt thou do?" "I will cut off the top of the berries, and make a brew that putteth to sleep him that smelleth thereat, and if he smell longer, he shall lose his tongue. It is a strong infusion, my child, and who taketh of it too much, be it man or woman, shall die the death. But a little is good against snake bite, and if one must be cut in his flesh, it is to him as though it were the flesh of another." "But all that is as nothing," Rachel cried, "and of what thou hast above all in thy mind, of that speakest thou not. Ah, dearest little sister, and dear Leah," she cried, beginning to wheedle her and to beg with her hands as a child does, "little vein of my eye, thou stateliest among daughters, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrake, that I may be fruitful, for my discontent at my lack consumes my life, and I have such shame of mine own unworthiness. Seest thou my doe, my golden-haired among the swarthy? Thou knowest the virtue of the brew, and how it can bewitch men, and is like the dew of heaven upon the barrenness of women, that they may blessedly conceive and give birth with ease. Thou hast in all 6 sons, and I but 2, which are not mine. What then are the dudaim to thee? Give them me, my little wild she-ass, if not all, then a morsel therefrom, that I may bless thee and fall at thy feet, for my desire is like a burning fever." But Leah pressed the mandrake to her breast and looked at her sister with threatening, squinting eyes. "What sauciness is this?" asked she. "Cometh here the favorite, and hath peeped and spied, and will have my dudaim? Is it a small matter that thou takest my husband daily and hourly, and wouldst thou take away my son's mandrake also? It is beyond all shame." "Must thou speak so hatefully?" responded Rachel. "And canst not speak otherwise, even though thou wouldst? Put me not beside myself by thus wrenching the truth, for I would be tender with thee for the sake of our childhood days. Sayest thou I have taken from thee Jacob, our husband? Thou thyself hast taken him from me in that holy night when thou didst secretly with him instead of me, and in his blindness he poured into thee Reuben, whom I myself should have received. And he would be now my son, if all had gone well, and would have brought me the stalk and the root. And if thou had asked of me, I would have given thee." "How thou talkest," Leah replied. "So thou wouldst have conceived my son. Why then hast thou not since that time conceived, and wilt make spells and do magic in thy need? Well I know thou wouldst have given me nothing. For hast thou ever, when Jacob flattered thee and would take thee to him, said unto him, 'Remember my sister too'? No, thou hast but pined and languished, and given him thy bosoms that he might play with them, and thought of naught at all but thy philandering. Now comest thou and begg'st, saying, 'I would have given thee.'" "Oh, how hateful," answered Rachel again. "It is all ugly and hateful, what thine own nature driveth thee to say, and I suffer under it. Yet for thyself I suffer more than all, for it is a curse to have power to utter naught but ugliness when one opens one's mouth. That I sent not Jacob to thee when he would come unto me was by no means because I grudged him to thee. May his gods and the gods of our father be my witness. But I am now unfruitful into the 9th year of our marriage, and I am in despair. And every night that he chooseth me, I hope ardently for the blessing, and risk not to neglect it. But thou, who mayest easily neglect it now and again, what purposest thou to do? Thou wilt bewitch him with the dudaim, and give me not of them, so that he may forget me, and thou mayest have all, and I nothing. For I had his love, and thou hadst the fruit, so there was a kind of justice. But now thou wilt have all, the love and the fruit, and I shall eat dust. So thinkest thou of thy sister?" And she sat down upon the ground and wept aloud. "I take now my son's mannikin and go hence," said Leah coldly. Then Rachel sprang up, forgot her tears, and cried out in an imploring whisper, "Do not so, for God's sake, but stay and hearken. He would be with me this night. He hath spoken of it this morning when he left me. 'Sweetest one,' he said, 'thanks for this time. Today the wheat shall be cut, but after the heat of the day I will come, beloved, and bathe me in the mildness of thy light that is like the moon's.' Ah, how he speaketh, our husband, for his words are like pictures and full of solemnity. Do we not both love him? But for tonight will I leave him to thee for the sake of the dudaim. Expressly will I leave him to thee, if thou wilt give me of them, and hide myself away, and thou shalt tell him, 'Rachel will not. She hath no taste for this night for billing and cooing, and thou shalt sleep with me.' Such were her words." Leah went red and pale. "Is it sooth?" she said, hesitating. "And wilt thou sell him to me for the dudaim of my son, that I may say to him, 'Tonight thou art mine'?" Rachel answered, "Thou sayest." Then Leah gave her the mandrake, leaves and root and all together, gave it hastily in her hand, and whispered with heaving breast, "Take it, go, let thyself not be seen." But she herself, as evening came and the people came from the field, went to meet Jacob and said, "Tonight thou shalt lie with me, for our son found a tortoise, and Rachel begged it of me at this price." Jacob answered, "So I am of the worth of a tortoise and a tabbied box made from the shell. I have no memory of being so resolved to sleep this night with Rachel. So hath she bought the certain with the unsure, and I give her praise. But if ye have so agreed, so let it be. For a man shall not set himself against women's counsel, nor kick against their resolved decisions.